You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 505.
Pour me a vodka on the rocks.
Yes, yes, hello, Cornflake.
Hello, Kevin.
We're back.
We're ready.
We're ready for part two of our memorial show. Everybody's very excited about this, based on the total lack of feedback from part one. I'm confident the audience is riveted by this list of dead people, and so we're just going to keep it rolling. But first, hey, how about National Whatever Day?
Well, you know who's turning 50 on January 13th, Kevin?
No, what are we doing?
Nicole Eggert.
Nicole Eggert. I remember that name. Was she Baywatch?
She was. She was Summer Quinn.
One of those Baywatch blondos and maybe a little Charles in Charge also?
One of the main characters. She was Jamie Powell on Charles in Charge.
I'm 2 for 2 on Nicole Eggert credits. I think I can go one more. I believe she made at least one movie with Corey Haim.
That would be correct.
Wow. I couldn't tell you the name of it.
I think it was Blown Away.
Okay.
Actually, I think it might be more than one, but they were all in the early 90s. Blown Away, 00 Kid, or 00 Kid, and Anything for Love.
All right. They made a series of movies together. They were
engaged.
One of the classic movie duos. I didn't know they were engaged. Corey Haim and Nicole Eggert.
They were briefly engaged. They're still friends.
What?
Sorry. That's some dark humor.
The memorial show is really getting confusing this year. Oh, poor Corey.
I would like to reject that last joke.
We're memorializing some people and bringing some others back from the dead.
Here's something I didn't know about Nicole. Were you aware that there was a celebrity competition for diving?
Absolutely not. Is she a diver?
Well, she was for this. There was a celebrity diving competition on ABC. Greg Louganis was part of it.
Okay. Now that's a legitimate Olympic diving dude.
Yes. There were also star judges. One of them was Joey Lawrence. Yeah. In 2013, there were 8 episodes of this, and it was called Splash.
I can't think of anyone more qualified to judge a diving competition than Gimme a Break's Joey Lawrence.
I just picture him every time somebody's going off a diving board. Whoa. But you know who else was in this and was competing?
I'm dying to learn who else was in celebrity diving. Please tell me.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Oh, no.
Louis Anderson.
So they were just going for visual shock as far as who would be doing the diving. Kareem and Louie. Oh, my.
And Keisha Knight Pulliam.
I hope they gave Keisha time to swim out of the way before Kareem and Louie got up on the board.
Well, I hope so, too. But I was reading this because I could not believe this was a thing that existed for 8 episodes, no less.
8 episodes?
Yeah. Rory Bushfield won. He's an extreme skier.
I would hardly count that as a celebrity.
Right. It's kind of unfair.
Yeah. They brought in a ringer that nobody ever heard of who was an actual athlete.
Unfair to the likes of Nicole Eggert and Drake Bell from Nickelodeon's Drake and Josh.
Yeah.
But Nicole got runner-up.
Well, that's pretty good. Congratulations, Nicole.
From what I understand, there were a number of injuries because none of these folks are professional divers. People were withdrawing left and right because they were getting hurt.
Okay, maybe that's why the show isn't around anymore.
Yeah.
All the lawsuits.
But that birthday girl, after wrapping up with Splash in 2014, she turned a corner and bought an ice cream truck. And she drives that around now.
What?
And that's why you haven't seen her in much of anything since, because she's found something that she loves to do, and that's what she does.
Wait a minute, seriously? Nicole Eggert got into the ice cream truck business?
She is an owner-operator of an ice cream truck, yes.
Okay.
After What are you going to do after you star on a TV show with David Hasselhoff?
I mean, has the world gotten ridiculous enough for you people yet? When are we going to kind of tap the brakes a little bit? I can't take this anymore.
I love the fact that she's driving around an ice cream truck.
Sure.
That's amazing. And for that reason alone, I would celebrate her turning 50 on January 13th. Happy birthday, Nicole Eggert.
Okay. Yes. Happy birthday, Nicole. That was a ridiculous one. I like it. So meanwhile, as we roll into a Flapcast Memorial Show Part 2, we're actually in the year 2022 now as we record. Last week, we were still in 2021 for our recording date. Now we're actually in the new year. So happy new year to you, Cornflake.
And to you.
Been enjoying the new year so far? Isn't it the best?
Yeah, I mean, actually, yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, everything's great.
I'm thrilled.
Yes. I did start the new year by running a race like a crazy person. New Year's Day, I was signed up for a 10K in Lowell.
Oh, you found yourself a reason to go back to Lowell. I'm sure that was interesting.
You and I have such a deep, dark history in Lowell. And yeah, I wanted to ring in the new year on the mean streets of Lowell, Massachusetts. So signed up for a 10K race. It was very weird. I went up there. It was based out of a bowling alley. Like you had to creep inside a shut down bowling alley to pick up your running stuff. And it was rainy. Remember New Year's Day? It was rainy.
Yeah, rainy, rainy day.
I was a little concerned about cold, rainy day to run my stupid 10K, and I almost didn't show up. I chickened out because I figured, well, what if I just don't go? You know, they're not going to send a van for me, drag me away.
That's what you think.
Yeah. As far as I know, I could have just skipped it. And so it was very cold and rainy, and we're all lurking around waiting to start. And then just a few minutes before the start time, the rain stopped.
Nice.
And it was delightful. Then the guy announces, okay, 1 minute. We're at the 1 minute mark. And then with like perfect comic timing, like it was in a cartoon, the skies rip open again.
Oh, the rain. Oh no.
Rain starts right back up, right in time for the race. So yeah, we ran the thing through the rain like idiots.
Perfect. Well, your year can only get better from there.
I'm hoping the rest of the year will be as ridiculous as the way I started it. Yes.
Oh, I think there's a good chance of that, given the way the world is right now.
And I'm very happy to say I won. You're looking at the winner right now.
Really?
Except for the 64 people that came in ahead of me. Yes. Thank you.
You're still a winner to me, Kevin.
Yeah, I'm a hero. Well, I survived New Year's Day. Here we are. And Memorial Show Part 2. For one thing, we were hoping that the mayor of Chickentown would be able to at least join us for Part 2. She was not able to join us for Part 1. But I'm afraid, Cornflake, once again, we have no mayor of Chickentown tonight. So we're still understaffed for our Memorial Show. But hey, we got through it last week, remember?
Yeah, we do okay with this. Left to our own devices.
We can do this. So we're covering the second half of 2021. We're just going to go through everybody from pop culture and from other areas, whatever, any names that caught my eye, looking over those we lost in the past year. We will wrap up the second half of the year right now. I mean, we're going to try to keep things light. It's not to be sad. This is more about looking back fondly on, you know, some people and cool things that they did, you know, so it'll be fine. We'll all get through it together. Do you have a beverage? I have a beverage.
Yes, I have a vodka on the rocks.
Were you serious about your vodka on the rocks?
Yeah.
You're actually, you're just drinking straight vodka over there on the rocks.
On the rocks.
And these are actual rocks, we should clarify. When Cornflake orders a drink.
And the nice thing is, it's really cold outside, so they're super cold rocks.
Chilled actual rocks from the ground outdoors, and you just swallow them right down.
They taste like vodka. What can I say?
They collect inside you in your gizzard.
Yeah, I wanted lemon vodka or vodka with lots of lemon in it, but I did not have any lemon. Evidently, vodka with lots of lemon in it on the rocks was Betty White's favorite drink.
Oh, my. Okay.
That is what I have.
All right. So we'll see what happens to Cornflake over the course of the show. Anyway, I'm drinking coffee, by the way, just like last week. I got my coffee here. And it is important to have beverages for the Memorial Show because anytime that we reach a name on the list of somebody that we saw in person, or especially if it's somebody that we actually met, we shall do a shot in their honor.
Well, please don't know most people on this list because I'm a lightweight.
Cornflake will be sipping vodka. I've got my coffee and we'll see what happens. So we're starting from back in July 2021 and off we go. We're starting with Richard Donner was 91. Director Richard Donner, probably his biggest accomplishment, for me at least, was Superman, the original Superman the movie back in 1978. And he actually directed Superman 2 at the same time, but it's a complicated story. The movie kind of got taken away from him, and another guy came in, Richard Lester, to finish directing it. But he sort of directed the first two Superman movies. He did the Lethal Weapon movies. He did The Omen. He did Scrooged, you know, the Bill Murray Christmas movie.
Bill Murray, yeah.
Yeah, and The Goonies.
Oh, man.
One of my favorites. Speaking of the Coreys, there's your other Corey, Corey Feldman, in The Goonies. So, man, a pile of important directing credits on Richard Donner. And even before he got into movies, he was directing TV. And back in the 60s, he directed, I believe, several episodes of The Twilight Zone, including the classic William Shatner episode, Nightmare at 20,000 Feet.
Ooh.
So that's Richard Donner. Charlie Robinson was 75. This is Mac from Night Court, Cornflake.
Yeah. This is a tough year for Night Court stars.
We do have another Night Court cast member coming up later. Yeah, but man, Charlie was good. He wasn't there at the very start of the show. They went through so many cast changes over the run of Night Court, but so many solid people kept piling on to that cast. He was very cool, very funny. Charlie Robinson. Another wrestler coming up. This is probably the biggest name wrestler on my list. The only wrestling I know is a 1980s WWF.
Right.
So those tend to be the wrestlers that show up on this list. But this was a big one, though. This is Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff was 71. It was Rowdy Roddy Piper, actually, that gave him the name Mr. Wonderful. And he kept it. He used that name for the rest of his career, I believe. And he was part of that big headlining match in the first WrestleMania. It was Roddy Piper and Mr. Wonderful versus Hulk Hogan and Mr. T.
Oh, yeah.
So he was a heel, as they say, one of the bad guy wrestlers at that time, of course. But then he kept flipping back and forth. He'd do a face turn and be a good guy. Then he'd do a heel turn again. Like over the course of just 2 or 3 years, I feel like he flipped back and forth 2 or 3 times. Excellent wrestler anyway. And take a drink. Sip your vodka there, Cornflake.
I thought this might be one we're taking a drink for.
Yeah. Generally with the wrestlers, I saw all those guys wrestle in person back in the 80s. And I definitely saw Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. William F. Nolan was 93. He was a writer and some cool credits for the likes of us. He wrote Logan's Run.
Oh, yeah.
That is Logan's Run, the novel, the original novel that they made the movie and TV show based on. He wrote the sequels to Logan's Run. Also, Burnt Offerings. He did some cool horror stuff as well. Burnt Offerings was a movie from the 70s. Probably my favorite horror movie.
Yeah, we've talked about this one on the show.
Yeah, I still find it so creepy and terrifying. And then looking back, I was very amused to see that it's rated PG. But it still terrified me as a kid, and it still does. He was one of the writers of Burnt Offerings. And also Trilogy of Terror, which was a TV horror movie back in the 70s. Starring Karen Black, and there's like a creepy little doll with a knife that chases her around. Super creepy and scary, Trilogy of Terror. But all that came from the pen of William F. Nolan. Cornflake, you might know this dude better than I do. How about Biz Marquee? Was only 57 years old.
This one hurt my heart. Biz Marquee.
I know he's that guy with that song. I don't know anything else about him.
Yeah, the Just a Friend song.
Yeah.
Well, he is also known for collaborating with the Aquabats. He was on their High Five Soup album.
Oh, wow.
And he also did some work with them on the children's TV show, Yo Gabba Gabba.
Now, what was his deal? Like, could he actually sing, or was that his thing? Is that, no, he can't sing, but he's just going to sing anyway.
he was a rapper. He could rap.
Yeah.
I don't think you necessarily have to have dulcet tones to be a good rapper.
Yeah, he was a rapper, but then he'd break into song. He was the part of that song that I remember, he was singing.
Yeah.
Or sort of attempting to, but it just sounded, it sounded like you singing after you finish your giant glass of vodka.
I'd say that's accurate, but man, anytime that Just a Friend song came on, just like anybody that I knew growing up, we'd all break into song and sing along with it.
It was so goofy and catchy, certainly. I'll give him that. Biz Markie, sure. How about Jerry Grinnelli was 80 years old. I didn't recognize this name, but he was a drummer. And in fact, he was the drummer in the Vince Guaraldi Trio. That's his drumming that you hear in the Peanuts Charlie Brown cartoons.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's some good stuff.
That is classic drumming. Jackie Mason was 93. We were talking about Jackie Mason not too long ago because of the Ant and the Aardvark cartoons.
Yeah, the style.
Yeah, that was John Biner was doing a Jackie Mason impression, essentially, as the voice of the Aardvark.
Really good one.
But Jackie was one of those old-timey comedians, of course. I never found him super hilarious. I never got into his stand-up. But, I mean, I knew him best from The Jerk.
With Steve Martin.
Yeah, he was the guy that ran the gas station where Steve Martin got the job. We watched him just a couple of years ago when we watched Caddyshack 2. He was one of the leads in Caddyshack 2. He essentially was the stand-in for Rodney Dangerfield.
Oh.
For the sequel. And what's weird is his character in The Jerk and his character in Caddyshack 2 had the same last name, which was Hartoonian.
Yeah, a little unusual.
Different first names. I was so startled when I learned that. So evidently there's sort of a Jerk Caddyshack universe, I guess, in which these guys are related, perhaps. That was Jackie Mason. Alfie Scupp was 101. How about that? And very important for us, Cornflake, because this was a voice actor who worked on several projects way back in the 60s, including several with Rankin Bass. Most importantly, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. He did a few voices in Rudolph. He was the voice of Fireball.
The friend to Rudolph, right?
Yeah, the so-called friend to Rudolph, who instantly turns on him and is as much of a creep as...
Stay away from me!
As everybody else, that's right, get away from me. Fireball goes into a freaked out panic over this weird mutated creature standing before him. Alfie Scupp was the voice of Fireball, and even better, Cornflake, the voice of Charlie in the Box.
So we lost the voice of Hermie this year, and we lost the voice of Charlie in the Box and Fireball.
Yeah, tough year for fans of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer as we are. But come on, the guy was 101 years old.
Yeah, he did good.
That's a pretty good run for a Charlie in the Box who nobody wanted.
Very true.
Dusty Hill was 72. This is the bass player from ZZ Top.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was never a big ZZ Top guy. Not really a fan. Where do you stand on ZZ Top? I don't think we've ever discussed ZZ Top, have we?
I thought their music in the late 80s was kind of fun.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have qualified it as my favorite, but Sharp Dressed Man song comes on and I'm happy.
Sure. I mean, they were massively popular.
That I did not understand. It's like, well, I like these guys, but the massive devotion I did not get.
And I mean, as a trio, those three guys were together for 50 plus years. So you got to give them that. But yikes, this guy was there with the giant long crazy beard all those years. Dusty Hill. Ron Popeil was 86. This is, you know, Help Me, Mr. Popeil from the Weird Al song. Although actually that the Weird Al song was about his father, because his father was Sam Popeil, who was also in the wacky invention business. This is Ron. I think people knew Ron even better than they knew Sam Popeil from all his years and years of wacky TV commercials, selling all his crazy products and whatnot. Remember the spray-on hair?
Yes.
Like if you're balding, Ron Popeil marketed, here's a spray on. You can restore your hair by just spraying more hair on.
Oh my gosh, that is so funny. We were just talking about that over breakfast this morning.
Wow. Well, this just in, 2 years into the pandemic, Cornflake's officially out of things to discuss at breakfast time. That's got to be at the end of the list. How about that Ron Popeil spray on hair? Now pass the Cheerios.
Yep.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right. Well, yeah, he certainly made very entertaining, very funny commercials for a long time. Ron Popeil. Help me, Mr. Popeil. Hey, Cornflake, going back to Night Court, Markie Post was 70.
And she was due to be in they were bringing back Night Court, and she was going to be in it.
Oh, yeah. I remember you were excited about an upcoming remake of Night Court. I wonder if that's been scrapped. Sometimes those projects just kind of die out.
Yeah, I'll have to look into it. I don't know what they'll do without Marky Post, though.
You know, we had Charlie Robinson just a few minutes ago, and now here's Marky, also from Night Court, of course. Christine Sullivan on Night Court. You taught me not long ago that she had been a regular on The Fall Guy. I was not aware of that.
Yeah.
And then she did Hearts of Fire after Night Court. She had a sitcom with John Ritter called Hearts of Fire, which I never saw.
Me neither.
But her most important credit was the pilot for a remake of Electra Woman and Dinah Girl. They made this crazy pilot. She was supposed to be like Pastor Prime, washed up Electra Woman. Then there's a new Dinah Girl comes along and gets her out of retirement. And they were going to make a new show, but then they didn't. They just made the pilot. But the pilot's around. It leaked out there, you know?
Something worth seeing for sure.
Yeah, it's probably popping around the internet somewhere. Look up the Marky Post Electra Woman pilot. I recommend it. Also only 70 was Dennis D.T. Thomas. And I put Dennis on the list, Cornflake, because I know you're a big Kool in the Gang fan.
Yeah, I saw this one too and it made me sad.
Dennis was one of the founding members of Kool in the Gang.
Of Kool in the Gang.
Going all the way back to, I think, 1964.
Mm-hmm.
He was the sax player, played the saxophone, played some flute.
That he did.
And was there from the very beginning. Yeah, they were great. Still in the world of music, Cornflake, Don Everly was 84.
As in an Everly brother.
Yes, he was the last surviving Everly brother. And with Don's passing, I believe we're down to one remaining guy from the inaugural class of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
That's right.
From 1986. I believe Jerry Lee Lewis is the last man standing.
Who saw that coming?
But Everly Brothers, I don't know too much about. I never listened to that much of their stuff, but it's like you love it when you hear it.
Yeah.
You know, it really is gorgeous, the harmonies that those guys did together. And the songs are classic, Bye Bye Love and Wake Up Little Susie. And
really smooth sound.
All I Have to Do is Dream, that stuff. Yeah, it's so often I think siblings, when they harmonize, sometimes it seems like the harmonies you get out of those sibling acts are just remarkable. And certainly those guys paved the way for all harmonizing in rock that was to follow. So Don Everly.
I wonder how many times All I Have to Do is Dream has been covered.
Let's say 3. That's probably a little low.
I think your estimate is on the low end.
I think it is. We're still in music, Cornflake, because next on the list, and take a drink, because I saw this guy perform live from the Rolling Stones, Charlie Watts on the drums.
Drink taken.
Charlie was 80. Yeah, Ed and I, Ed from Sponge Awareness, Ed and I went to a Rolling Stones concert way back in 1989.
Do you have to take 2 drinks because you both saw him?
Yes, have more vodka.
Okay, I'm on it.
Why am I encouraging you to drink your vodka even faster? That was probably a huge mistake. Ed Asner was 91.
And he was keeping busy right up till his final days.
Yeah, this guy's credits go on forever. His biggest credit, I would say, was Lou Grant from the Mary Tyler Moore Show. He was Mary's boss and then got his own spinoff series out of that. They spun that off into a new show called Lou Grant, which was weird because Mary Tyler Moore Show is a sitcom and Lou Grant was a drama series, but same character.
That's an interesting way to do a spinoff.
Yeah, very weird move they made. With Lou Grant, and he did lots more TV back then. I remember a show called The Bronx Zoo from the late 80s, where he was a high school principal. Lots of cartoon voice work as well. A big one for DC Comics nerds is Granny Goodness, who is this evil, creepy old lady from Apocalypse who worked with Darkseid in DC Comics. He was the voice of Granny Goodness. Brilliant casting, you know? Hire an old man to do the scary old woman's voice. And it was super effective. But Cornflake, I know you're a fan of Up, right? So that's probably a big credit for you.
Yeah, the old man, Carl Fredrickson.
This was the old dude with the balloons, right?
Yes. And he got to play that role one more time just this past year. Not long after he passed on, Disney Plus posted a set of cartoon shorts called Doug Days, which is based on the dog that can talk with the collar.
Oh, yeah.
And he got to do the voice of Carl Fredrickson again. But that wasn't the only recent thing that he's done. We know that he's been on Cobra Kai as well.
Yeah, he was William Zabka, Johnny Lawrence. What, was he like his stepfather or something like that?
He was the stepdad, yeah.
Yeah, so made a couple of appearances at least on Cobra Kai. In fact, I saw the first episode of the new season and they dedicated that show to Ed Asner at the end, which was nice. So yeah, super impressive pile of credits from Ed Asner. He was also out of his mind and had some really crackpot thoughts and theories, which are very unfortunate. So I'm not going to let him off the hook for that. He was a nut. He was wrong. But entertained the people for many generations, made some fine TV shows and movies. Fantastic performer, Ed Asner. Michael Constantine was 94. Not a super well-known guy. He was one of the stars of My Big Fat Greek Wedding, which I never saw.
I've seen that exactly once.
People would know him from that, people who are not me. But for my purposes, we had a guy on the list last week who was a villain on Electra Woman and Dinah Girl. Well, so was this guy. Michael Constantine was in a couple of episodes of Electra Woman as the Sorcerer. We have discussed this guy during our reviews of Electra Woman and Dinah Girl over on the Batcave podcast. This is our third Electra Woman actor in the Memorial Show, Scornflake. And he had another Electra Woman connection as well, because he was also one of the stars of a show called Room 222. And that's going back to the late 60s, early 70s. This was a TV series set at a high school. He was the principal. But Judy Strangis, who played Dinah Girl a few years later, was one of the regular high school students on that show. It's all coming together, but he was the Sorcerer. He was Michael Constantine.
Did you meet him?
Never met the guy, no.
I'm having a drink of vodka anyway.
Let's pretend I did. Actually, Cornflake, you can just keep it going because we're up to somebody who I did see in person once.
Okay.
And this is a big one for you. How about Willard Scott was 87?
Weatherman Willard Scott, yep.
I know how you feel about weather people.
Inspirations, for sure. And he was on the wacky side.
He was just the goofball.
Yep.
Which was fine. That was his thing. And was the weather guy on the Today Show for many, many, many years. And very funny. He's the guy that started the wishing a happy birthday to people when they turned 100.
Yes.
That became his thing. He'd give the weather, and then he'd throw out a bunch of birthday announcements for people who were over 100 years old.
I almost called them centaurians. Centurions. They do not become centaurs.
As soon as you transformed into a half-horse mutant creature, you'd get a happy birthday from Willard Scott. Yes.
That's what it takes to get Willard Scott to acknowledge you.
Yep. In his pre-weather days, going back to, I don't know, the 1950s, I guess, he was a Bozo the Clown. Not the original, but he did work as Bozo for one of the local TV markets back then. And then while he was doing Bozo, he also got hired by the local McDonald's chain. And he was the very first Ronald McDonald.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Willard Scott essentially created the character of Ronald McDonald.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's a pretty amazing credit.
I'll say.
To be Bozo and then be Ronald McDonald and then go on to what people know you for. Doing the weather all those years. I remember him hosting the Macy's Parade as well, which Al Roker does now.
Al Roker has followed in the footsteps of Willard
Scott. Yeah, they've really found the perfect guy to replace Willard Scott, because Al was goofy and could slide right into doing the Today Show weather and doing the parade. I also remember Willard Scott from the Hogan Family. He'd occasionally pop up on the Hogan Family playing Mr. Poole, husband to Edie McClurg's Mrs. Poole.
I'm trying to remember back to that. I think I remember it, but only vaguely.
Yeah, and I did see Willard in person once, because this must have been the early 90s. They were doing the Today Show live from Boston, and clearly I had nothing better to do, because I went down to Quincy Market just to hang around and watch them do the show. So that was Bryant Gumbel was there, and Deborah Norville. Film critic Gene Shalit was there, and Willard Scott was there. In fact, as I recall, Willard, because they were in Boston, Willard was dressed in costume, like a Revolutionary War era kind of a costume.
That's dedication.
So he looked even goofier than usual, but there he was. Yeah, one of your weather heroes, Willard Scott. How about Norm MacDonald was only 61? Comedian Norm MacDonald.
Yeah, he was not that old.
That one caught everybody by surprise. I know he'd been in poor health and really just kept it a secret. A lot of people couldn't stand Norm, or at least found him very annoying, and I get that. I was a fan. Probably first started seeing him doing stand-up on Letterman, and then he jumped from there to Saturday Night Live, and then he was doing Weekend Update. You know, he was the anchor on SNL doing Weekend Update for several years. I found him hilarious.
I thought he was really good with Weekend Update.
So awkward. Like, he would just say shocking things that people either found funny or were just stupefied into silence.
You just recoil a little bit.
Yeah. And he would just let it hang out to dry. He didn't care. Yep. He would just pause and stare at the camera and run it out. You know, he would like dare you to be shocked and offended by whatever it was he was saying. He was a weird dude, but quietly, I think, very smart, very sharp, and very, very funny. Cornflake, I think I skipped over one because you had somebody, a name that I didn't know that you wanted to bring up.
Yeah, commemorating Sean Locke, who was only 58 years old. He was a fine British comedian. He would routinely appear on 8 out of 10 Cats hosted by Jimmy Carr, and he would just do these hysterical routines, but very dry humor, surreal, deadpan, very funny, Sean Locke.
All right, good catch. Let me see. Up next, I had, Gavin O'Herlihy was 70. And, well, he's on the list because he was Chuck Cunningham, as in the brother from Happy Days that disappeared and was never spoken of again. Back in the very early episodes of Happy Days, there was an older brother. There was Joni and Richie and Chuck, who was in college. Older brother Chuck. Played by Gavin O'Herlihy, and then another guy played Chuck for a couple of episodes as well, and then they decided, you know what, who needs Chuck? And then they just wished him out of existence. Chuck disappeared with no explanation and was never spoken of again. So the lost, missing, zapped to the Phantom Zone, member of the Happy Days cast, Chuck Cunningham, played by Gavin O'Herlihy. We shall never forget you, Chuck Cunningham.
Even though everybody else did.
Everybody else did, but not on the Flopcast. You're alive to us. Where am I now? Ruthie Thompson worked for Disney in the animation department. Ruthie did several jobs for Disney. She worked in inking and in painting and in film processing and camera and all sorts of things on the Disney movies over the years. But Cornflake, going back to the 30s, she worked on Snow White. In 1937, she worked on Pinocchio, Fantasia, Dumbo, and up into the 70s, Aristocats, Robin Hood, Rescuers. On and on it goes. So a long, long, long career. She grew up in Boston, so a local lady. But she caught my eye on the list because Ruthie Thompson was 111.
Whoa.
A super centenarian, they call her.
Or a super centaur, as I would accidentally call
her. She was also a centaur. Yes, a super centaur. That's when you're two horses, I think. It gets very complicated. But yikes, going back to Snow White for Disney, Ruthie Thompson, 111. Next we have, this is a massive one for me, Cornflake. Take a drink. Take a big gulp of vodka for Joanna Cameron, who was only 70. And Joanna, well, she was Isis. You know, I grew up watching Isis from the Shazam and Isis Hour Saturday mornings. This is our superhero Isis. And that was, you know, goofy Filmation, live action Saturday morning show. But she was terrific. I believe the first live action woman superhero to star in her own TV show was Isis, was Joanna Cameron, just narrowly beating out Wonder Woman and Bionic Woman. I think Isis was first. And yeah, I loved this show, Shazam and Isis both. Such a goofy show, but Joanna really brought a grace and a seriousness to the role, really sold it. She was beautiful, of course. I mean, she got the job. I think Lou Scheimer, the producer, there's a DVD extra where Lou says something like, "We hired her for her legs." Because the Isis superhero costume is essentially, she was dressed like Steffi Graf. You know, it was like a tennis outfit, essentially, with a couple of fancy Egyptian jewelry things attached to it. So lovely lady, of course. She'd done a lot of modeling and commercials. She did a ton of TV commercials, a handful of movies and other TV appearances, including Spider-Man back in the 70s. But she was really only in acting for just a few years, moved to Hawaii, and really led a pretty reclusive life. after that, did not appear in public or do very many interviews after that. The mayor of Chickentown and I were very lucky to have been able to meet her several years ago. This must have been, 15 years ago. She did make an appearance locally. And at the time, this was before the ISIS series had been released on DVD. And she had a petition with her that she asked us to sign to petition for ISIS to be released on DVD.
Wow.
So we signed the thing. Sure. All right.
Of course.
You know, if ISIS asks you to sign something, you know. And strangely, just a few years after that, there was a nice DVD release of the ISIS series. And they did some extra features and interviews with the cast for it. But Joanna did not participate in it.
Oh.
Which surprised us since, you know, just a few years earlier, she seemed very interested in there being ISIS DVDs. And yeah, for whatever reason, she was a very private person and they tried. I read some things from the producers of the DVD set, like they were negotiating with her to participate in the DVDs and they could not reach any kind of agreement,
wow,
which is too bad. But there are some interviews out there. She did do an occasional interview and an occasional appearance. And man, it was certainly a treat for us to meet Joanna. After she died last year, just a day or two after she died, our friend John from the Batcave podcast and from the Shazam ISIS podcast, he was actually able to round up her co-stars from ISIS. That's Brian Cutler and Joanna Pang Atkins. I think it was just a day or two later that they did a podcast together talking about Joanna. So that's available still. Everybody, please do check out the Shazam ISIS podcast and their tribute to Joanna.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So for those of us who just continue to obsess over, you know, kids Saturday morning TV of the 70s and 80s, one of our heroes was ISIS and Joanna Cameron. Yeah, knock back some vodka.
I already did, but I'll do it again.
Just keep going. Denise Breyer was 93 and did some voice acting back in the 80s. A couple of big credits for us, though. In Return to Oz, which was that pretty terrifying live-action sequel to Wizard of Oz from Disney in 1985, Denise was the voice of Billina, the talking chicken. So come on, we love that. And the following year they did Labyrinth and she was the voice of the Junk Lady. So super cool credits there. I saw an incredible Junk Lady at Dragon Con a few years ago.
I remember that.
I think it was the year Karen Prell was there. Karen Prell was the voice of Red Fraggle from Fraggle Rock and did lots of voices in Labyrinth and all sorts of Henson projects over the years. And yeah, there was a costumer who did this astonishing Junk Lady costume that year. People thought that it was the real Junk Lady that they used in the movie. It was incredible. But the voice of your Junk Lady and Billina the Chicken was Denise Breyer. Betty Lynn was 95. Betty Lynn's biggest credit was back on the Andy Griffith Show. She was Thelma Lou. That was Barney Fife, you know, Don Knotts, Barney Fife's girlfriend, Thelma Lou.
Thelma Lou.
And Betty Lynn, I'd read about quite a bit in the last couple of years because I read Mark Evanier's blog, newsfromme.com. And Mark Evanier is a animation writer, comic book writer, and historian. And when Mark was a kid growing up in Los Angeles, Betty Lynn was his next door neighbor.
That's cool.
So yeah, this was his Aunt Betty growing up. Was also Thelma Lou on the Andy Griffith Show. And out in Mount Airy, North Carolina, that was Andy Griffith's actual hometown. And Mount Airy, North Carolina has sort of turned into a tourist destination for fans of the Andy Griffith Show. And the whole town has kind of fashioned itself into Mayberry. There's a big Andy Griffith museum there.
That's cool.
And Betty Lynn actually moved to Mount Airy, North Carolina several years back. And would just make regular appearances at the Andy Griffith Museum and just meet fans and stuff all the time.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, that's how she spent her last several years, was just kind of living in actual Mayberry, essentially, and people would just freak out getting to meet her there. And Mark Evanier actually, just a couple of years ago, was able to visit her. So he had a very recent visit, which was really special. He wrote all about it. And yeah, isn't that nice? Then Betty Lynn was really, other than Ron Howard, you know, Ronnie Howard survived since he was just a little kid when they made the Andy Griffith Show. But I think Betty Lynn was the last surviving member, I believe, of the adult cast of the Andy Griffith Show.
Wow.
And apparently a wonderful lady, Betty Lynn. Jack Angel was 90. This is another cartoon voice guy. Did voices for the Transformers and Voltron and lots of other stuff. For our purposes, he did several voices on the Super Friends. He was three of the superheroes on the Super Friends. He was the Flash, he was Hawkman, and he was Samurai. One of those ethnic heroes they invented for the Super Friends.
We've talked us some samurai on this show.
Oh, yes, we have. Well, the voice behind Samurai, as well as Flash and Hawkman, that was Jack Angel. Peter Scolari was only 66. Yikes, this was another one that caught everybody off guard.
Yeah, we lost a bosom buddy.
We did lose a bosom buddy. He was Henry. It was Kip and Henry on Bosom Buddies, Tom Hanks and Peter Scolari. Yeah, he was so funny, so great on Bosom Buddies, and then rolled right into Newhart, spent the rest of the 80s starring in Newhart as Michael, and was so incredibly funny on Newhart, too. Did lots of stuff after that as well. I forgot about this, but there was a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids TV series. Do you remember this?
No, I don't.
Yeah, late 90s. They did a TV version, and he did the Rick Moranis part. He was the star, the father, in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, the TV series.
Wow.
Another voice guy did some voice work. The biggest one for me was he was the voice of the Atom on Batman Brave and the Bold. And then another Batman credit was on Gotham. He was the commissioner on Gotham. Not Commissioner Gordon, because Gotham was kind of a prequel series and Jim Gordon was not the commissioner yet. It was Peter Scolari. And he was also on Girls just a few years ago, the HBO comedy series, Lena Dunham series Girls. He played Lena's father there. So yeah, this is a guy that just... known for his 80s sitcom stuff, best of all, but continued doing all kinds of quality stuff, even in very recent years. Peter Scolari. James Michael Tyler was 59. Did you watch Friends, Cornflake? I can't remember.
Just a little. Yeah.
This was Gunther, the guy working at the coffee shop.
Oh, yeah. With the black shirt.
Gunther, that dude at Central Perk. And from what I read, he got that job because he was the only extra on the set that could work the cappuccino machine.
And well, that's as legit a reason as any.
Yeah. And then he kind of fell into that job where he was in like almost every episode, I think. He was Gunther, James Michael Tyler. Mort Saul was 94 and very important in the history of stand-up comedy because he was really the guy that turned old-timey just tell goofy jokes comedy into the more political, sophisticated type of comedy. He was the guy like back in the 50s, 60s.
Well, he was the guy that made that shift.
Yeah, like even ahead of Lenny Bruce and ahead of George Carlin and Richard Pryor, Mort Saul was there first and became known as the political comedian, that he would go on stage with a newspaper and start riffing off of what was in the newspaper. And that was kind of his thing. Kind of went off the rails at times and kind of fell out of favor eventually. But in his day, very important, very influential comedian, Mort Saul. Peter Aykroyd was 65, and that's Aykroyd as in Dan Aykroyd. This is Dan's younger brother, Peter.
Oh.
Who was also a comedy guy, not terribly well known, but he was also part of Second City, appeared in a lot of Dan's movies over the years. And was actually in the cast of Saturday Night Live, briefly, in the weird 1979-1980 era, when a whole lot of people shuffled in and out of the cast very quickly. The show was in transition. They were trying to figure out what to do as the original cast left, and Peter Aykroyd was in there briefly. They tried switching out a lot of cast members with their brothers on SNL because they had Jim Belushi. They had Brian Doyle Murray instead of Bill Murray, and they had Peter Aykroyd for a bit. But as an SNL fan, I wanted to give a mention to Peter. So there you go, Peter Aykroyd. Take a drink, Cornflake, for Dean Stockwell was 85. In lots of movies and things over the years, but I knew him best from Quantum Leap, where he was Al. He was like the hologram that would pop up to assist Scott Bakula as Sam, time traveling on Quantum Leap. That was Dean Stockwell and was very funny, very cool. And they did a little Quantum Leap reunion at Dragon Con several years ago, and they had Scott Bakula and Dean Stockwell were there together. And I went and saw them speak, and he was terrific, Dean Stockwell. Dave Frischberg was 88 years old, and this is another guy with Schoolhouse Rock credits. He was a songwriter.
Which ones did he write?
Well, most of the stuff he did is not very well remembered, because they did a handful. It wasn't really labeled as Schoolhouse Rock, but that same team back then did a handful of short cartoons about computers. And this was in like the early 80s, early to mid 80s, you know, early days of computing. They did cartoons called Scooter Computer and Mr. Chips.
I remember Mr. Chips.
Yeah, he wrote a couple of those songs. He wrote Software and he wrote Number Cruncher. And then several years later, after that kind of classic era of Schoolhouse Rock, they did a series of Schoolhouse Rock cartoons called Money Rock, trying to teach kids about...
like financial stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Spending responsibly, that kind of thing. And he wrote a few of those songs as well. But going back to the classic Schoolhouse Rock stuff from the 70s, he only wrote one of those, but it's one of the biggest. Dave Frischberg wrote I'm Just a Bill.
Really? Well, if you're going to be remembered for anything.
I mean, come on.
I'm Just a Bill is enduring.
Absolutely. And this was a jazz guy. He did tons of writing and performing and recording of all sorts of jazz stuff over the years. So an accomplished guy. But yikes, I'm Just a Bill. That makes him super important to the likes of us. Stephen Sondheim, of course, was 91, one of the great composers in Broadway history. I'm not a big Broadway guy.
No, I did not meet him.
Yep.
But I played a character in a rendering of one of his musicals.
Oh, good. What'd you do?
I was Gussie in Merrily We Roll Along. We've talked about this on the show.
Oh, yes. We have absolutely talked about this. Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the few Stephen Sondheim shows that I've seen. I didn't see you.
Nope.
I must have gone to a different production of Merrily We Roll Along. But yeah, that's right. I remember that you did Gussie. That's fantastic.
So I'm taking a drink. Just saying.
Do it. Merrily We Roll Along is the show where it's backwards. Each scene happens, they kind of go back in time, scene by scene.
Right, they're looking back and then looking back a little more and then looking back a little more, trying to figure out where it all began.
When I saw Merrily We Roll Along, which was many years ago, the part of Gussie, your part, was played by our old friend Whitney Avalon.
That's so neat that I get to play a part that Whitney also played.
Yes. Back when Whitney was Massachusetts based, before she went out west to conquer Hollywood, we did see her as Gussie, just like you. Yeah, that was a fun show.
Oh, she had to have been an amazing Gussie.
She was fantastic, of course. I think that's one of only two Stephen Sondheim shows I've ever seen, because I also saw Into the Woods once many years ago. And this was out of college. A girl I knew from my old coffee house was one of the stars of that production of Into the Woods. And so I went to that. Other than that, I think I'm pretty clueless about Stephen Sondheim stuff, but one of the legends of Broadway, of course. A little more our style, though, would be Eddie Mecca, who was 69. And this is Carmine Ragusa, the big ragu from Laverne and Shirley.
Well, I'm going to take a drink for the big ragu.
Oh, go ahead. You're just drinking for everybody at this point, aren't you? I'm on to you.
Yeah, I've lost touch with the original basis for taking a swig.
Carmine Ragusa. This was Shirley's on-again, off-again boyfriend through the entire run of Laverne and Shirley. He was a song and dance man on the show, so he would constantly be breaking into singing and dancing. A Massachusetts guy. He was from Worcester, Massachusetts. He attended Berklee School of Music here in Massachusetts. And that was really the big credit of his career, though, was Laverne and Shirley. He was there for the whole run of the show. Always enjoyed his work. I was a Laverne and Shirley fan, so I saw plenty of Carmine. That was Eddie Mecca. If there's any vodka left in New England, Cornflake, go ahead and take a drink for Michael Nesmith.
Oh.
Here's a huge one for us, of course. Michael was 78. We're talking the Monkees, of course, which we love. Man, we've spoken of the Monkees so many times on the show, including not long ago. I saw Michael Nesmith in concert with the Monkees and solo several times over the years, including just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, literally, you get to see one of his last performances.
Yeah, right towards the end of this year's Monkees Farewell Tour, they came to Massachusetts. And we spoke about it here on the Flopcast, so people can go back. We don't have to go into detail about that concert. It was very special, of course. Michael Nesmith was having a great time. He loved doing that tour, by all accounts. It was a difficult tour for them, of course, because he was not in the best of health. But he absolutely loved doing it. And yeah, our love of the Monkees, no secret around here. I just read his book about a year or so ago. He put out an autobiography just a couple years ago called Infinite Tuesday. Fascinating guy, of course. You know, the Monkees was a pretty small part of an amazing life. I'd recommend people look deeper into his life and career as well, his solo stuff through the 70s, as he was really one of the pioneers of country rock music. Then got into film production, of course, and produced tape heads, produced television parts, produced Repo Man. So a lot of kind of cult classic video stuff he was involved in. Invented music television, essentially. He was one of the people involved in the creation of MTV. So what a life, what an impressive guy. I never got a chance to meet him in person. I met Peter a bunch of times. I've met Mickey a bunch of times. Never met Davey, never met Mike. There's one monkey standing. Mickey is still out there.
And there's no stopping him. He's going to outlive us all.
Mickey? Yeah. Someday it's going to be Keith Richards and Mickey when the rest of us are long gone. That is correct. But yeah, we love Mike Nesmith. Left a ton of magnificent music behind. One of our absolute favorites. But let's move along. And oh, you can take another drink, Cornflake, for vampire novelist Anne Rice.
As somebody you've met.
Was 80 years old. Strangely, yes, I did meet Anne Rice many years ago. And I'm not a big Anne Rice reader. I never got into those vampire books. Interview with a Vampire. I tried to read once and it just was not working for me. I've read a couple of her books. They're fine. But I know people are way into Anne Rice. Ken Cragen was 85, and I recognize this name right away from We Are the World. This is one of the guys that organized and produced USA for Africa and We Are the World. He was managing Lionel Richie and Kenny Rogers at the time, and that might be why they ended up using Kenny Rogers' studio. I think that's where they actually recorded We Are the World.
Oh, he was the hookup.
I think so, possibly, because it was Harry Belafonte who was involved in the charities that they were looking to support. Harry Belafonte went to Ken Cragen, and then it all came together from there. And then the following year, Ken Cragen was also one of the organizers behind Hands Across America.
Which we have discussed on this show.
You know I'm endlessly delighted by Hands Across America because it was so completely ridiculous. I mean, they meant well, but what are we doing? So I love it. I love ridiculous things from the 80s, and that might be at the top of the list. So thank you, Ken Cragen, for Hands Across America. Take another drink, Cornflake, for Billy Conway.
I should not have manufactured so many reasons to take drinks before this.
See, well, the end is in sight. There's only a handful of names left. But Billy Conway was 65 and a local music legend because Billy Conway was the drummer in Morphine, whose frontman, Mark Sandman, we lost many years ago, of course. But one of those legendary Boston bands of the 90s, Morphine, which was like bass, drum, and saxophone, you know? So they had their own sound.
The good stuff.
Yeah, they had that low, super cool, bluesy sound. And this was the drummer in Morphine. I saw Billy Conway once. I never saw Morphine, but I saw their previous band. The guys from Morphine had a band before Morphine called Treat Her Right. And I saw Treat Her Right in the late 80s opening for Boston once, you Ooh. Know, for the band Boston. Yeah.
Cool.
Which was a crazy show. Post-Morphine, there was a band called Twine Men, which was the surviving members of Morphine plus Laurie Sargent. And Laurie was the singer in Face to Face back in the 80s. They had a hit song. She was cool. They were cool as well, Twine Men. So one of those guys, not a big name nationally, but Morphine is considered a very important band locally. Billy Conway. one more wrestler, Cornflake, and that is Corporal Kirshner, was 64. Another one of those guys from the WWF of the mid-80s. And Corporal Kirshner, he was just like a military guy. And he looked like Rambo. I think they decided, let's do a Rambo-type guy. So he had the long hair and the camouflage kind of outfit and would come running out. And he's Corporal Kirshner. But important to me because, and yeah, take a drink, Corporal Kirshner was in the first wrestling match I ever saw in person. The first time I went to see the WWF live, the very first match was Corporal Kirshner versus Mr. X.
Wow.
Who was just the mysterious guy wearing a mask.
That's as suitable a Mr. X as any.
Yeah. Well, Mr. X got beat up by Corporal Kirshner that day, I assure you.
And the mystery beaten right out of him.
Yeah. Andrew Vax was 79. He was a writer as well as a lawyer, and he did all kinds of stuff. I was a fan of his writing, but real interesting guy, because he wrote kind of crime fiction, detective fiction kind of stuff, and real hard-boiled, kind of dark stuff. Very cool writing if you're into that kind of stuff. And I read a ton of his books, especially back in the 90s. But in addition to that, Andrew Vax, he was a lawyer, and he specialized in juvenile cases and victims of abuse, children, abused children, was his cause his whole life. I think even the money from his novels fueled his legal work.
Oh.
Which is bizarre.
You know? Well, bizarre, but really respectable.
Normally it's not, I'll make money writing, and then that'll fund my work as a lawyer.
Yeah, I guess that is a little unusual.
Not the way it normally works, but I think it actually worked that way for Andrew Vax. So did some really important work, I think, for kids. And at the same time, wrote a lot of super cool fiction. Even wrote some Batman books and some comic books as well. Did all kinds of stuff. I read a lot of his work over the years. That's Andrew Vax. And let's jump right down now, Cornflake, to the very end of the list. And you know where this is ending, because New Year's Eve.
This is where I finish my drink, even though I never met her.
You might as well chug the rest of it down, because everybody knows how this one's going to end. Because New Year's Eve at 99, of course, it's Betty White. And what a year for the cast of the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
I'll say.
By the way. That's number four for the year. Last week, we had Cloris Leachman and Gavin McLeod.
Yeah.
This week, we already had Ed Asner, and now here's Betty. There's essentially nobody left from the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Nope. Nobody
left. I mean, Robbie Rist was there for a handful of episodes as Ted Knight's son. And Robbie's alive, of course.
Robbie's going to be right there with Mickey Dolenz, though. He's also going to outlive us all. But man, Betty is the reason why I'm having vodka on the rocks tonight, since that's her favorite beverage. And it didn't hurt her in any way, because she lived a whole 99 years.
I guess that's the secret to eternal youth, is a lot of vodka. Did you learn that from your friend Vodka?
Yes.
I would not trust everything that girl says, necessarily. I mean, it worked for Betty White, but...
Well, every time I ask my friend Vodka what a celebrity's favorite beverage is, somehow it's vodka.
Yeah, your friend Vodka would go down this whole list, and everybody was like, Anne Rice, oh yeah, vodka.
Vodka.
Big vodka drinker, yep. Betty Lynn from Andy Griffith, just knocking back the vodka all day, every day, back in Mayberry. But yeah, was anybody more loved nationally, internationally, than Betty White from Mary Tyler Moore, Golden Girls, all the game shows? She was like the queen of the game shows.
She was, and she was a hero to adopted animals everywhere.
Absolutely. I've seen people mention this week that wouldn't it be nice for January 17th if lots of animal charities just got bombarded with donations in Betty White's name. And I know when we were on a Classics Trek quarantine panel about science fiction dogs, and as I recall, at the end of that panel, Joe had asked everybody to recommend a favorite animal charity. Would you be able to knock out a recommendation right now for Flopcast listeners?
Oh, yeah. I've got a couple of them I can suggest, and one of them is Almost Home Rescue and One by One Rescue. And their big thing, both of them, is finding animals that are in overcrowded shelter areas and bringing them to places where there's better resources so that the dogs can have homes.
All right. So we will have links to Cornflake's favorite animal charities with this show.
They gave me my three dogs.
This is where your dogs came from. And you've got three little bowls of vodka all lined up on the floor there for them.
So the doggies can drink up.
It's adorable. So Flopcast listeners, maybe throw a few bucks in Betty White's name to Cornflake's favorite animal charities. That'd be nice. And that's probably a pretty nice way to wrap up this year's memorial shows. So let's wrap this one up, Cornflake.
Oh, let's see if I can do this, because I'm going to tell you how to find the Flopcast between shows. We're at flopcast.net. We're also on facebook.com/flopcast. On Twitter, you'll find us with our handle, @Flopcast. And we're on Instagram, the_Flopcast is our handle there. You can go on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating and or a review. That's going to help other podcast listeners find the Flopcast. And sorry, that was my dog making a noise in the background. So you can go over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating and or a review. We would love that. Music for the Flopcast is written and performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
And with the passing of Biz Markie, there is no worse vocalist than what you'll hear on your favorite Sponge Awareness Foundation album. Cornflake, thanks for getting us through another memorial show. Everybody, we did it. Thanks for hanging out with us. And meanwhile, please be safe, be kind, be good. Be silly in the new year, and we'll see you next week.
Peace and cookies.
How did watchdog groups with no experience in television take a controlling interest on Saturday morning television?
When did Wonder Woman make her animated debut?
Want to know why there were two competing Ghostbuster shows?
How Atari changed the Saturday morning landscape?
How did networks compete over similar genres at the same time?
Find out all of this and more on the Best Saturdays of Our Lives podcast.
A proud member of the ESO Network.
Cornflake, this is the Secret After Show. Hello.
Hey.
We have an update from last week's Secret After Show.
We sure do.
Last week, I gave out my panel schedule for this year's Aresia Convention. The big science fiction fantasy convention that happens in Boston every January. I had my panel schedule all ready to go, and I announced which panels I would be appearing on. Well, the update is I will be appearing on zero panels at Aresia this year, because just a couple of hours ago, as we are recording, Aresia was officially canceled.
Oh no.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's fine. It was the right thing to do with pandemic numbers on the rise again. I think that was the right call.
Yeah, certainly a right decision.
We got to protect the nerds.
That's right.
I was not worried about myself, because my plan was to just go in, barricade myself in my hotel room with a stockpile of whatever I need to get through the weekend. And I was only going to emerge for my panels, wearing all my N95 masks and double masks and whatnot. I was going to bring a broomstick, you know, just to poke at everybody. So I would have been just fine. But with the best interests of all the other nerds and geeks of the Boston area in mind, this was the right call. So forget everything I said last week, anyway. I mean everything. Even all those people we discussed last week, it turns out they're all still alive. Everything I said last week, completely wrong.
And they're all still friends of Nicole Eggert.
Yes.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the T Public Store, which can all be found at ESOnetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.